You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The pandemic squeezed supply chains around the world, but one of the most serious shortages, which raised the anxiety levels of millions of American families, was the shortage of infant formula. Strains made worse last year by the recall of one major formula brand and the closure of a critical production facility in the Midwest for months. As a result, the formula shelf was empty in about 70% of stores across the country. That was back in May of 2022. With 10 states, including California, where the out-of-stock rate in stores reached 90%. This left families and caregivers in an anxious search for formula. One of those mothers was Jennifer Hahn Holbrook, a mother of two, and a professor at UC Merced who studies the psychology of breastfeeding. Her experience motivated her to conduct a nationwide study on the impact of the formula shortage on families. And Holbrook joins us about the difficult decisions families had to make in trying to feed their infants during this crisis. Professor Hahn Holbrook, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Starting off, what led to a career into the psychology of breastfeeding?
You know, I think I'm an explorer by nature, and really there's not a lot of research on how psychology and biology interact during pregnancy, but also during lactation. And also, human milk is just endlessly fascinating for me. I'm a bio geek, and I love it.
You're also the director of the Latch Lab at UC Merced. Tell us more about the work that you and your colleagues do there.
Sure. So we study how psychological factors like stress and social support could influence mother's hormones in pregnancy, or even the hormone levels in her milk, and then how that in turn influences infant development. So we look at infant temperament, infant obesity risk, lots of factors. And human milk's just amazing because it's not just nutrition, but it's also information in the form of hormones, and also medicine in the form of antibodies and things like that. So that's just some examples of what we do.
I mean, you just laid out a lot of information that I would imagine isn't explained to families before they embark on parenthood and breastfeeding.
Yeah, I think we think of human milk as nutrition often, but it is so much more. But I obviously also just, my career was first and foremost, I want to make sure every baby and mother have the best possible start in life. And so that's my career goal, what I've dedicated my life to. And so in that, I want babies to be fed. And a lot of babies, you know, are not going to be able to be breastfed, whether for surgical reasons or because of, you know, the mom has to go back to work and the job's not flexible. We don't have paid maternity leave in this country. So I want to ensure that every baby's fed and every mom and baby, you know, feel supported and cared for and have the best possible start. So formula, you know, is a good thing too. So that's one of the reasons why we did this big study on formula shortages.
Yeah, a study that was also shaped by your own personal experience searching for formula for your own infant during this shortage, right?
Yeah, like many families out there, it was hard during the COVID-19 lockdowns. And I think a lot of adults will remember, you know, going to the grocery store and rice and beans and bread would be sold out. And that's okay, because you could do like potatoes or corn or another thing. But what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, infants can only eat one of two things for the first 5 months of their life, either human milk or infant formula. And so there wasn't any options for formula-fed babies. So my baby actually had a rare form of jaundice that made it so health-wise, I was breastfeeding, but he also needed formula. And my little angel, you know, was having bottles every day. And I had a lot of trouble finding infant formula. I'd go to the store, it'd be sold out. I was lucky enough to have a car so I could drive to multiple stores. I was lucky enough to have the money so I could spend, you know, 200% more on some organic brand of formula I'd never tried. And so I had to switch formula brands, and baby was not happy with that, you know, caused some upset and so a little bit of diarrhea, but we were okay. But a lot of families struggled. Mm-hmm. Including me.
I have a lot of friends who during that time, they were just going from store to store looking for formula. They were spending so much money, and already, you know, strapped for cash, you know, at that. Yeah. You know, when it comes to breastfeeding versus formula, I mean, how common is it to be able to breastfeed full time without relying on formula? Or do the majority of mothers need formula at some point, especially in the first 5 months?
Yeah, the majority of families in the U.S., 3 out of every 4 will have to use formula at some point. Only 25% make it to the kind of the ideal from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is to feed your baby nothing but human milk for the first 5 months of life. And the reasons for that are complex, but mostly it's because of lack of lactation support. So breastfeeding is actually really hard. And it's not just something that's easy and natural. You need a lot of medical help. Another thing, and health insurance is so piecemeal in the US, some people have great lactation support covered by their insurance, but a lot of people don't. And then another huge factor is obviously no paid maternity leave in the United States. So exclusively breastfeeding can take, you know, anywhere from 4 to 7 hours a day. That's like a part-time or full-time job.
Full-time job, yeah.
And so who's going to, you know, mom can't just sit at home not making money in most families. So, you know, we're not mom blaming here at all. That's the number one thing. It's these systemic issues. And so, yeah, the United States has some of the lowest breastfeeding rates in the developed world because of our piecemeal health insurance system and our lack of paid maternity leave.
How did you conduct the survey? How wide of a net did you cast for respondents?
Yeah, so we surveyed 319 families who were caregivers of infants at least some point during the pandemic. It's important to note that this was not a nationally representative study. We were just scrambling as a lab to kind of, with the shutdowns, figure out what to research. And one of my undergrads actually brought up this idea, and it immediately resonated with me because of my own experience. So we just used snowball sampling, like put it up on Facebook, put it up on Twitter, tried to get people to spread the word. We also used Amazon Mechanical Turk to get some participants. And we just asked some really basic questions about, number one, kind of, how hard was it for you to find infant formula or the breastfeeding support you needed? We also asked about that. And then if you did have trouble or made changes the way you fed your baby because of issues that came up with the pandemic, what did you do? And that was really the biggest missing piece. Like nobody had really asked, everyone's freaking out about the formula shortages, but no one had really asked, okay, what did families do when there was no formula? And the answer wasn't good.
Yeah, I would imagine when you're doing the survey and you're getting the responses, especially because you had that very intimate experience as a mother looking for formula as well during that time, that a lot of it, or maybe some of it, was confirmation of your own personal experience. But you talk about that missing piece. What surprised you most in the responses of people of what they had to resort to, given that they couldn't have reliable access or affordable access to formula?
Yeah, I guess, unfortunately, I wasn't surprised by a result. So 1 in 3 formula feeding families ended up using a potentially dangerous feeding practice because they didn't have access to infant formula. So those dangerous practices included things like formula thinning. So 11% of our formula feeding families were trying to stretch formula. So that means they put, you know, a little extra water in the bottle, a lot of extra water in the bottle because they only had one jar of formula left. And what are you going to do? And so I guess that was not that surprising. I guess one of the surprising things for me was how widespread it is. So, yes, it was true that low-income families and food insecure families were much more likely to kind of have to resort to formula thinning practices and these potentially dangerous formula feeding practices, but it was really widespread. And even some of our wealthier families had a hard time as well. But it wasn't just an inconvenience for families. You know, it wasn't like you could just go to another store. Sometimes there were some families who just couldn't access formula. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really sad.
What are the potential long-term health impacts by, you know, adding more water to formula or going longer between feedings?
Yeah, so There's a lot of really negative health effects. So with regards to formula thinning, it obviously is giving the infant less calories than they need. And the babies are growing very, 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 very quickly. And so with that, you can cause long-term health impacts for the infant's development as they grow. So you could have deficits in cognition throughout the lifespan, problems with cardiovascular disease throughout the lifespan. So there's short and long-term consequences. In the short term, obviously malnutrition, hunger, in extreme cases, it can even lead to death. Some families also kind of tried to get creative and, put in rice cereal or things like that into the bottles. That's also a really bad idea, especially for the youngest infants, because it's related to choking deaths. Infants are not ready to drink, these globs of things. It's related to a lot of diarrhea and gastrointestinal problems. And when infants' systems are so delicate that even just giving a few bottles of water or juice instead of formula can lead to electrolyte imbalances and cause like seizures and problems even immediately. So it's really important that infants, when you're mixing formula, to mix it properly. And obviously, we're not parent blaming here because what were families supposed to do? I mean, and we need to make sure that, no family anywhere in the world, but especially in the United States, ever has to face that difficult decision of what am I going to feed my infant today?
Well, turning to solutions, I mean, at least in the immediacy, the recall of some of those formula products, I mean, it just compounded the supply crisis. At that time, the Biden administration did take action to improve the supply chain for infant formula. But what other steps do you believe should be taken on a state and a federal level?
Yeah. Over the long term, I think we need to invest in breastfeeding. Breastfeeding families were obviously, insulated from these formula shortages. But that's a longer term goal, and that would involve paid maternity leave and better lactation support are the two things we need to do. There was always going to be those infants, though, that cannot be breastfed. So we also need to ensure good access to formula for those infants. So for that, at the kind of national level, I think just like we have backups of kind of insulin and things like that, preparing for disasters, we need to have like a really good emergency plan for times like this. And I think US was kind of caught with its pants down a little bit in the fact that here's this emergency and we didn't really have proper backups. Another thing that's good is the Women, Infant, and Children's Program, WIC, became a lot more flexible. So that's a food program for our lowest income families. And it did become a lot more flexible so that you're able to buy like different brands. It used to be that you could only get the one brand, and that's going to obviously be sold out the fastest. So it's a lot, and they didn't allow online ordering. So kind of keeping those flexibility in our current kind of food security net would be a really great idea. And then finally, we need to educate families on, how dangerous it is to use these deleterious feeding practices and what you can do. Like a lot of families didn't know that it was okay to switch formula brands. They were like, oh. Or a lot of families didn't know that, like the Women, Infant, and Children's Program or their local hospital or their pediatrician can kind of help get you access to formula in emergencies too. So, and what you don't want to do is be mixing your own formula. And I think just a lot of just education for parents would be really helpful that it's absolutely not a good idea to feed your infant juice or cow's milk if they're 2, 3 months old.
In
It's
the
dangerous for their electrolyte balance and their short and long-term health.
Right. I mean, especially when you just talked about, cow's milk and also not having water as well in the first months. I mean, these in the immediacy, what can be done to better educate families and new parents about that you can switch formula and things that could be pretty easy and at times critical fixes, but you don't know what you don't know.
I think in the US, we really like to focus on individual solutions because we like to have kind of the power. But I think what this formula shortage shows was, that sometimes we do need kind of more sweeping solutions. So if you're running out of formula, right, I'm not going to blame any parent who, had to resort to one of these feeding practices, I would recommend, you know, if you're running low on formula, contact your pediatrician if you have one, contact your local hospital, contact the local Women, Infant, and Children's Center in your community. They can help you get formula, and also switch brands. You know, that is the safest solution, and that's okay. So it's obviously more difficult, though, for families. Some infants, because of their genetic makeup or health issues, can only drink kind of specialty formulas. And so those, you know, parents are going to have a harder time. Also at the store level, this was something I saw, because even before the formula shortages became kind of, everyone was aware of them, they were happening in waves as COVID was happening, because everyone would freak out because of COVID and then go hoard a bunch of stuff, buy 10 jars of formula, just like you were buying all the rice to just in case,
and
right?
Toilet
kind
paper,
of this apocalypse
right. Yeah.
mindset. So if stores could have kind of limits on the amount of formula that you can buy, only one or two, you know, not 10, so that richer families don't hoard all the formula, and, you know, keeping it away from the families that don't have, you know, formula is very expensive, you know, $500 to spend on formula this month. I mean, that is not an outrageous sum. That's what, you know, people were doing. And so limiting that at the store level would be really good.
You also stated, I found this interesting, that climate change will likely increase the potential for more disruptions to formula supply. How so?
Yeah. So in natural disasters in general, which are going to become more common as we see because of the, you know, warming atmosphere, it's going to cause more fluctuations and storms, which is going to both lead to this kind of feast or famine in terms of rainfall. You're either in a drought or you get these like storm after storm after storm, like you were just talking about. That can, you know, wash out roads, that can turn over shipping containers, that can make it so ingredients that we need to make infant formula can't get to the factories that they need to get to. Also, just think about if you have a fire and you're having to, you're stuck in your house or you're in an evacuation center, right? We oftentimes forget about the infants. We forget about the newborns. So we've got the granola bars and the canned food, but we don't have the canned formula at that place. So those are some of the ways natural disaster just causes chaos. And if you don't have access to clean water and, you know, infant formula, and also the bottles you need, all the supplies you need to feed the babies, then baby's not going to get fed if they're formula fed. So, yeah, I think this was a great opportunity for the U.S. to kind of wake up and realize that this is a vulnerability. And I really don't think one thing I love about studying this is everybody can agree, Republican, Democrat, that babies should be fed, you know? And so one of the things I love about my research is it kind of brings everybody together. So let's come up with a plan, an emergency plan, so this doesn't become an issue again.
Jennifer, thank you so much. I mean, you and the people at the Latch Lab, I mean, we just hit the tip of the iceberg. We could have kept talking and talking and talking with all the fascinating work that you're doing.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jennifer Hahn Holbrook is a professor of psychology at UC Merced and director of the university's Latch Laboratory, sharing her research on the impact of the infant supply shortage on families across the country. Still ahead, we're going to head to Davis and learn how a startup is listening to crops to increase yields and limit pesticides. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.